Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 Dream Beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
AM 570
trending.
LA Sports Now.
Here's what's trending from the iHeart Sports Network. Dodger fans, I'm feeling you. Crazy crucial game 3. Estanoche from Texas. It's Bueller with his electric stuff. And the Rays, Mr. October, Charlie Morton. Morongo Casino pregame with Tim Cates begins at 3. Morton flings at 5:08. Game 3 of this World Series between the Dodgers and the Rays on your home of Dodger Baseball, AM 570 LA Sports, or you can stream the game for free on the iHeartRadio app. To search AM 570 LA Sports, presented by Chef Marito Seasonings. It's not a true Mexican dish without Chef Marito. Reyes, they lose their way. O-line on the reserve COVID list. Trent Brown triggered it. I'm Victor Brickchew.
AM 570, an LA sports icon.
Fred Rogan is here tonight.
Decades on your television covering Los Angeles sports.
Fred Rogan, huge in Los Angeles.
The Dean.
I'm the Dean.
Fred Rogan.
Weekdays before Petros and Money.
A USC All-American.
USC's Rodney Peete.
An NFL quarterback.
Absolutely perfectly delivered by Rodney Peete.
Available on the iHeartRadio app or on AM570LASports.com.
This is Rogan and Rodney.
And we continue on. Fred Rogan and Rodney Peete in early today on AM 570 LA Sports. All Dodgers all day. As we get you ready for Game 3 of the World Series, you'll hear it right here on AM 570. And a man who will be on the call of that game, as he is every game on this radio station, long time Dodger announcer Rick Monday. Hello, Rick. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm still trying to recover from your last segment, guys. Rodney, there's a special place waiting for you in heaven. I'll tell you that much. The bit that was doing, Fred can't read. He's making up stories. He's making up answers. Then he goes back and retraces the steps. It was perfectly clear, right?
Listen, Rick.
I'm glad that you understand what I have to deal with, Rick. I appreciate you.
You know what, Rick? Well, if you want to get right to it, then let's do it. I got a bone to pick with you, too.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
The other day, You were on the Today in L.A. morning news. I was on. I started talking to you. Why'd you start giving me a hard time then? Why are you giving me a hard time on TV?
First of all, you crashed the party. You crashed the party the last second, which I loved. I was going to ask you that day, do you remember the first day that you and I, because I remember this. I remember the first day that you and I were introduced to one another. I can tell you exactly where we were at that particular time, and he had just moved out to Los Angeles. It was at the Rams camp in Orange County, and they were getting ready for the season. That was the first time that I met you when you first came out.
You know what's funny about that? You're older than I am, and you have a much better memory.
Well, evidently it meant a lot more to me than it did you, but it's just one of those things. Okay. So I have a bone to pick with you. I'm not sure that's a bone or not, but I do remember some things. Social media. Obviously, this is a different year for all of us. I mean, around the entire world, this is a different year. Dodgers are trying to make it a different year and win the World Series, okay? But we're all doing things differently, including the broadcast.
Yeah,
I'm at Dodger Stadium.
Right.
My broadcast partner, Charlie Steiner, is in his home on the west side of L.A. When the Dodgers are on the road, I'm in a luxury suite. I'm not even in the broadcast booth. We're looking at it on monitors. And I believe a certain Fred Rogan said after the first game that we did on July 23rd against the San Francisco Giants, To paraphrase it, it was like Rick and Charlie sound like they're doing the Masters on the 18th green.
That's right. That first game. That first game. That is absolutely true. Charlie, Rick, I swear to God, I thought Charlie was going, and now he's lining it up. And if he makes this.
You know, the thing that's really weird is that we have delays, and the delay that I have on some of my monitors may differ from the delay that Charlie is having in his home. So we're kind of going back and forth. And I got to tell you, I think it has worked splendidly. It's not what we would like to have optimum because we're kind of missing the overall flavor of it. The club is in Arlington, Texas. Again, you know, I'm here at the stadium and Charlie's in his home, but we still get the feeling. I mean, it's one of those things, Rodney, you understand it. Somebody asked me, I said, well, what do you feel like before the big games? I said, well, you know that little pit in your stomach that you get? I said, entertainers get it. I guess actors get it before they go on. If they're going on stage, they get it. Fred, you probably had it too when you're going on a really big TV show and what have you. That's a good thing, and you want to hold on to that. The trick is to be able to channel that little feeling that you get, whether it be butterflies, whether it be anxiousness or not, to be able to challenge it and to change it into something positive. And that's what the guys are doing in Arlington tonight for game three of the World Series.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. I always, you know, the guys that said, oh, I never get butterflies, I always questioned that. Rick, I always wondered, how do you not get butterflies before a big game or for a game, any game? You know, it just doesn't make sense because that means that it means something to you.
Exactly. Exactly. It does mean something to you. And I talked to entertainers. They said, the moment you don't get it, and I think it applies maybe for athletes too, because you're reacting to something that takes place, like trying to hit a baseball. You're reacting to an action. And if you don't have that little feeling, is it that important to you? And if you don't have that little feeling, what is the motivation that you have? So, I get goosebumps all the time just watching games and talking about them.
Rick Monday's with us. Fred Rogan, Rodney Pete. We're in early today on AM 570, LA Sports. Rick, in the first hour, we heard a lot about Charlie Morton and really that he has been terrific. I'm not looking deeply enough into this, but I think, and granted the Dodgers have struggled against really good pitching, but they know Morton. They saw him in 2017. I don't seem the least bit concerned. Of course, I'm not hitting against the guy. But are people making too much of the fact that Charlie Morton has been really good recently?
No, they're not making too much of it. Can he be hit against? Yeah. Well, I mean, the Dodgers look at him. They faced him when he was with the Pittsburgh Pirates. They faced him when he went on to the Phillies. They faced him in other areas as well. He is a different pitcher than what we've seen. And with Tampa, they changed him a little bit, even from when he was with the Houston Astros, from the standpoint of the pitches that he throws. His big strikeout pitch this year has been the curveball with a higher percentage than what it has been in the past. But he's a guy that, first of all, can work the zone. And by that, I'm talking about he can hit. So, in other words, if my scouting report says that Fred Rogan handles the ball inside better than he handles the ball away, Charlie Morton has the ability to show the ball to you inside off the plate and then pound the ball away. So he has that ability to do it. If he sees that Rodney Pete doesn't handle a curveball particularly well, his strikeout pitch is a curveball, and he's able to set that thing up. He's a very heads-up guy. He's not a rookie. He's 36 years of age. He knows how to pitch, and right now he's on a roll. And the Dodgers are going to have to stick to a better plan than what they had in Game 2 on Wednesday, because they struck out 15 times, and 13 of the 15 times they struck out was a swing and a miss. And they've got to make better contact and swing at better pitches tonight.
Yeah, and that being said, obviously you're right about Charlie Morton. He's a veteran who's learned how to pitch better later in his career, which is pretty good, you know, for him. What concerns you from the Dodger standpoint, if anything, in Game 3?
I think making the little plays, Rodney, it's the little things that maybe get overlooked, such as, and not to put it at anyone's feet, there was a ground ball hit to Kiki Hernandez on Wednesday night. It should have been a double play. It was bobbled momentarily. They still got the out at first base, but extended the inning. And then there was a base hit, and then there was a double two-run scored, and technically the Dodgers should have been out of that inning. And it turns out to be a very close game at the very end. So you cannot afford to give away outs because the other team will hurt you. That's been one of the keys for the Dodgers. They have taken advantage, if you look at the entirety of the year, regular season and in postseason, and in particular against the Atlanta Braves. When the Braves made mistakes, the Dodgers capitalized on it. And you cannot make mistakes at this juncture. There's only certain games. Each team's won one. Somebody's going to win three more and be the world champion. And the Dodgers, I think, have an excellent chance to do that. But they've got to play more consistent than what they did in game two.
You know, from a Dodger perspective, pitching-wise, I don't know if there's a guy I'd rather have on the hill tonight than Walker Buehler, Rick.
Well, he's one thing about it, he doesn't suffer from a fear factor. I hope he comes out as he did the last start that he has and just throws strikes, because he's, you know, if you look at the four playoff games he's been in so far this year, ERA is under two. When you can throw the ball between 96 and 100 miles an hour, then you've got the curveball to go with it. He has the ability to really be the mainstay. The Dodgers have to score. I mean, if you don't put a run on the board, the best you can hope for is extra innings. Walker Buehler may be the perfect guy. And also, from his standpoint, is that he can stretch the game out, hopefully, and get to the sixth inning or the seventh inning, where you don't have to go bullpen, bullpen, bullpen. No one asked me my opinion, but I shudder when I start to hear the words, "Oh, we're going to have a bullpen game." I don't care if it's the Dodgers or anybody else. That way you're counting upon a lot of guys. For example, Wednesday, the Dodgers used seven pitchers in that game. In the 1981 World Series, with all the games that were played, the Dodgers used a total of seven pitchers.
That's crazy. You know, Rick, it's interesting you say that, because I think about that a lot, especially, you know, in times when you play, when I play football. I look at the game now in football going, I probably could still be playing the way they protect the quarterbacks now. They don't allow them to be touched. And it's 7-on-7, basically, as opposed to 11-on-11, because the quarterbacks don't get hit and they're throwing the ball all over the place. What you just mentioned is seven pitchers in a whole World Series. When you look out and see, nobody throws a complete game anymore. Nobody even goes past the seventh inning anymore. What do you think about the way the game is played when you mentioned, like, bullpen games and things of that nature?
I love it. I'm fascinated by the game, first of all. You're going to have more pitchers in a game or more things happen. I mean, the rosters, for example, are expanded to 28. So you're going to have more players and more opportunities. If you look at the metrics, and we are in an age where we have so much information that is available for us to be better positioned to understand what we need to do as a team against another team, and you look at their metrics. But if our metrics are showing, hey, wait a minute, this guy begins to either A, have velocity drop off after X number of pitches, or the third time to the lineup, the batting average against goes way up, and you've got a bunch of arms in the bullpen that throw 95 to 100 miles an hour, and you can come out and give them the ball and basically a raw piece of meat and say, hey, look, go as many outs as you can. We probably only need three from you because we got another guy out there that's eating raw meat and throws the ball even harder than you are. You're crazy if you don't take that and use it to your advantage. And that's what baseball is doing right now. The emphasis is more, I think, to the back end in closing out games, but you have to have that guy to kind of shut it down on the front end. And with Walker Buehler going tonight, I think he's the perfect matchup to say, hey, here's a piece of raw meat. Go out there and see how long you can go. The question is going to be, what about the blister on his hand? Because if that blister pops up, then you lose grip. It's uncomfortable. And do you lose command and velocity on your pitches? We'll find out.
Rick, before we let you go, I've been a fan of this guy all year long. Just give me your quick take on Gratterol.
He's delightful. From time to time, Charlie and I, in between half innings, we get closed circuit monitors of the bullpens. And Gratterol one day was like he was bored. He was picking up the rake and he was raking the mound in the bullpen. We look up, and other times he's doing other things down there. He's dancing, all kinds of things. He's delightful. unless you pick up a bat and you go to face him, and he's throwing 101 miles an hour with movement. But here's a young guy that has come on. I think he's had the type of season that you look at and say, my goodness, what a statement he has made right now. I'm in agreement with you. I think he's fascinating to watch. I think he's fun to watch. Again, unless you're the hitter standing 60 feet, 6 inches in front of him.
Thanks for doing this today. It really, we really appreciate it. Yeah.
It's
my pleasure, guys. And hopefully we have a great game tonight. I know the parking lot is going to be filled with some more people and drive in and watch the game. And hopefully we hear a lot of horns honking tonight as the Dodgers win.
All right. Yes, sir.
Rick, thanks. Have a good call tonight.
Stay well, my friends. Take care.
All right. Isn't he the best, Rodney?
Yeah, I love Rick Monday. As a player, as an announcer, as a guy, I don't know if I'm saying this right. No disrespect, but he's a good man.
Fred. He really is. And really funny. And just a really good person. So we appreciate Rick coming on the show today. Here's what we're going to do. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Let's get more of these calls in. People were talking about where their meter was. Some people are still holding from the first hour. We got a couple of open lines at 866-987-2570. Dodger fans, it's your chance and it's your day. We've got another game and we want to hear from you. How you feeling going into the game tonight? It's really that simple. I'm in green. Rodney's in green. Where are you? 866-987-2570. Jump online. We'll hear from you next.
3, 2, 1. Grab your phone because now is your chance to win $1,000. Text the keyword cash to 200-200. You'll get a confirmation text and info. Standard data and message rates apply in this nationwide contest. That's cash to 200-200.
Performance.
Hogan and Rodney.
Rodney Peace.
An athlete.
Rodney Peace.
A father.
Rodney Peace.
An LA icon.
Rodney Peace.
And this guy.
Fred Rogan. AM 570 LA Sports.
Ooh. Ronnie, you came back with a little Skrillex?
Ooh, yeah.
Ty Dolla $ign. Rodney Pete, Fred Rogan on a Friday. We don't care because it's game day. Dodgers, Rays, Game 3. Walker Buehler, Charlie Morton, how you feeling about the game today? Are you in green? Are you in red? Are you in orange? Fred says he's in green. I'm always in green. Until it's over, it ain't over. So I'm always in green. But Freddie, I don't know what Freddie is. He says he's in green, and I believe him because the look in his eyes says he is in green. But we'll see. It's Friday. Game day. We're going to take some of your calls, too. We want to hear where you're standing, where you're at. Are you still in green? Are you in orange? Do you hit the panic meter yet? We want to hear from you.
All right. Raul's in Eagle Rock, and Raul says stop hating. All right, Raul, who's hating on who?
No, well, I just want to mention about that diehard Dodger fan that called earlier that they're going to lose no matter what with Dave Roberts and Clayton Kershaw and Kellen Jansen. Well, as a Dodger fan, a real Dodger fan, I mean, we want to be there every year, you know? I mean, to me, I would prefer to have 8 NL pennants besides 8 West divisions, you know? We want to be there every year in the World Series. But, of course, the outcome's not always to be in our favor. We did lose back-to-back. But then again, 2017 was cheating. You canceled that one out. 2018, they were probably cheating too. So you canceled that one out too. So we haven't even lost to the in the World Series, if you want to see it that way, you know?
Well, you know, I get what you're saying. I think in the 2018 series, it wasn't as much about cheating as it was about the Red Sox were just really, really good. I think that's what that one came down to. 2017, yes, you're 100% right. You can make that argument. And by the way, go ahead.
Yes. But with that said, though, also everyone's freaking out with the bullpen game in game two. What's to say? Do you want to flip-flop that one? We got Kershaw game one, and he did his best. He won game one. So let's say we flip-flop that one. Let's say Kershaw lost one, and we won game two with the bullpen. I mean, I take it how it is. That's fine. You know, Kershaw won his. I prefer him winning his than the bullpen winning theirs, you know? That's the way I see it. And Tampa Bay are there for a reason, of course. But then let's remind all the fans. Tampa Bay did lose three in a row. So that's we're playing that team that lost three in a row.
Raul, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. 866-987-2570. How you feeling this morning as we get ready for game three? Daniel in Santa Ana, go ahead.
Gentlemen, it's so good to talk to you. It's worth the wait. I'm a big fan of your show. It's the first time I'm calling. I feel really good about the Dodgers. You know, if they lose today, they'll be fine. If they're down 3-1, they'll be fine. Because look at what's happened in this postseason. And the Dodgers should not be afraid of Charlie Morton. They've seen him before. Don't have to mention when they've seen him before. He's not the boogeyman. And, you know, and then what I got to say is about the Dodgers, too. They have this because the Rays are burning through their bullpen. They burned through Castillo. They burned through Fairbanks, you know, two big bullpen guys. And then we don't even know who the Rays are going to throw. I feel like they're panicking because I looked at their starting pitchers for the next few days and nothing but TBD. And with the Dodgers, you already know who's coming. You have Kershaw coming up, Urias starting another game. The Dodgers have this. I feel really good about this.
Yeah, and Daniel, we feel good about it as well. Thanks. Just remember this. Tampa has three pitchers. You've seen two. Now you'll see the third. So the reason it says TBD is because they really don't know what they're going to do. I'm sure, Rodney, a lot will depend on how they play tonight.
Yeah, a lot is going to depend on how they play tonight. But I just – which is – why I think these next three games are critical for the Dodgers to get two of the next three for sure, because then, you know, if it goes deeper, it brings back some of their original starters for Tampa Bay. And listen, I don't look, Tampa Bay is in the World Series for a reason. Now, I still believe Dodgers going to win this, but they're there for a reason. And I do not believe at this point Tampa Bay is a team that will panic. They've been through it. They've been through the Yankees in a five-game series. They were up 3-0. If they were going to panic, they could have panicked against Houston when Houston tied that series up 3-3, and they had to go to a game seven. They ended up winning that one. So there's not going to be any panic in Tampa Bay. They got veteran guys. They got good pitching. I just believe the Dodgers are better and will beat Charlie Morton today, which puts them in the driver's seat. And then I think they get one over the weekend. It's and go up 3-1. It's very difficult, no matter who they bring back to start the game.
Okay, listening on the app in San Francisco. And remember, you can always listen on the iHeartRadio app wherever you're at. Sergio, go ahead.
Yeah, what's up, guys? Nice to talk to you guys again. Hopefully I don't get cut off like yesterday towards the end. But I stay in the green. Yeah, I stay in the green.
Wait a minute. Whoa. Why'd you get cut off? What happened?
And I was going through the tunnel on the Bay Bridge, you know what I mean? So that's why I got cut off. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
So, I was born coming out with a Dodger hat and everything. But like I said, man, I'm not worried about it. Dodgers got to stick to their game plan that they've been doing all this time. Got to take those pitches. Pitchers got to pitch good. And even if they score early, and I'm talking about the Rays, they just got to keep it within striking distance. And like I said, and once that happens, man, it's going to be all good. And then, you know what, again, to all these naysayer Dodgers fans, hey, man, just, you know what? Y'all need to just stop the cap, okay? Because you know what? We don't need that right now. You know what I'm saying? We're here for a reason. It's so special going on. You know what? Win or lose, man, I'm always with the Dodgers. You know what I mean? That's my team. I'm going to live and die with them, go down with the shit, always. You know what I mean? And like I said, so if y'all don't want to be here, then get up out of town, dude.
All right. That's
all I got to say.
Yeah, dude, get up out of town. Yeah. Get out of town.
We don't need no haters.
Dude. We don't want that.
How do you say how do you say you're a diehard Dodger fan and say, well, they're going to lose because Clayton Kershaw and Dave Roberts and Kenley Jansen?
But he did say he'd be the first one to eat crow.
Yeah.
You better sharpen your utensils. Adam in L.A., go ahead. Adam, you there?
Yeah, I'm right here. My bad. I'm in the green, man. Green light. Let's go. I think that they need to worry about Buehler, they being the Tampa Bay Devil Rays, because if you guys remember, I believe it was last year when we ended up with a tie with the Rockies and we had that one-game playoff game, and he was lights out. So he's proven he's a competitor. I don't think he gets enough credit as Charlie Morton for some reason. But, yeah, man, and to that dude that called earlier about being a hardcore, you know, true blue Dodger fan and talking all that nonsense – man, that guy, low-key, I think he's a Giant fan. And let's play Blue. Bring it home, baby.
All right, Adam, appreciate it. 866-987-2570. Michael in Long Beach. All right, where you at today?
I'm at Green, sir. Green all the way. I'm just like Rodney, man. How we was at the last the last game that we had against
Atlanta.
The Braves.
Yeah.
Yep, Atlanta. This guy, you cool as a cucumber, man. I'm telling you. That thing, I was like, this guy said, I'm green all the way. Even in game 7, I'm green. I'm like, how is that possible? Anyways, I appreciate taking my call. I just need them to be, we need them to be an aggressive base run, I guess you would say, that emotion that we had in game 1. Game 2, we really didn't see that. Like, I understand we were down 0-5, but we came back, brought it back to 2. I mean, down 3.
Hey, Michael.
But when we asked, yes, sir.
What are you doing right now? Where are you?
Working on a car.
Oh, are you? All right. Just want to make sure. Make sure. Appreciate your calling. And I know that you're taking time out of your day. I just wanted to know what you were doing.
Oh, yeah. I got some downtime right now. I'm waiting on some parts. So.
All right.
Just decided, you know, listen to you guys. I'm always listening to you guys on the app because we got horrible reception at work. So I'm always listening to you guys on the app.
I'm with you. It felt like in game 1, they did come out really aggressively and took it to them right away.
When Mookie Betts got on first base and then Corey Seager hit that single, then Mookie Betts stopped at second, I kind of thought he would have went straight to third regardless of we held him or we didn't, because Mookie Betts has that energy, and I think you would have put a little bit more pressure on the pitcher if you had one guy 90 feet away from scoring, and that would set him being down 3. You might be, instead of them being up 3, it could have been up 2 and vice versa. And then I want to get you guys' opinion on game 1. I know we're not supposed to be talking about the past, but in game 1, Justin Turner was on second with that blooper. Do you think he could have made it to third? With no outs?
Appreciate.
You think he would have took the gamble? And on top of that, what do you think Dave Roberts should have, like, took him out and put Matt Barnes in? Austin Barnes in to be a pinch runner so we can get those legs in? I know he's not that fast of a runner, but, you know, that kind of would have helped out, too. It seemed like there was no emotion in game.
Well,
Appreciate it.
Yeah, the cardinal rule in baseball is you never make the first or third out at third. And so, because he's already in scoring position, so you don't want to try to stretch it. If there's any chance you get thrown out at third, you don't want to make that first out at third, because now you're taking a guy out of running a scoring position off the base pass. So, yeah, you don't want to chance that. No, you don't want to stretch it, especially if it's Justin Turner, who's kind of coming off that hamstring.
Go down the street and out of North Hollywood. Harry, what do you think?
What's up, guys? I'm definitely in the green right now. The Dodgers are going to win today. I'm just hoping we get a long outing out of Walker Buehler. And I think it's revenge time for Charlie Morton. I mean, he pitched a game 7. I don't like to think about it, back in 2017. But I think it's time to get him early today. Get him out of the game.
Good point, Harry. And, that would be the objective. I mean, really, that's the objective of every game, Rodney. Let's get to this guy early. Let's strike first. I will say this. The Dodgers, if you've watched them throughout the playoffs, there's a very different vibe when they score first.
Yeah.
You know, it sort of energizes them. And that's why people are saying it's so important that Mookie Betts gets on and Mookie Betts gets things started right at the very beginning.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And another key thing is the Dodgers keep it within striking distance, right? Because then what doesn't happen is what you talked about, Fred, is that they run out of innings at a certain point late in the game. Because you figure at some point that second, third time around the lineup, the Dodger bats, somebody's going to get going. And it happened in game 2. It just came up a little short. They spotted them 5 and had to come back and fight their way back all the way through. And that made it difficult. I think in the Atlanta game 7, they were only down 2. And they were able to get that back real quick with a home run. And then now all bets are off. It's a new ball game. So even if they get behind, as long as they keep it in striking distance, I think late in the game, teams fear the Dodgers and what they can do and their firepower. So the key for them is, even if they do get behind, let's not let it get out of hand or too many crooked numbers.
Rudy, you're not worried at all, are you?
Rudy! Hello? No, I'm not worried at all. Hello? Yeah, I'm here. I'm not worried at all. I just came back from Texas. I was there for game 1 and game 2. I mean, we did good with me game 1. Game 2, we could have been a little bit more aggressive. But I ain't worried. We got this. This is my team. This is our year. And even if it's not, I will still bleed blue until the day I die. I'm not going to give up on my boys in blue.
Hey, Rudy, what was it like being at the games? What was the atmosphere like? Could you move around?
Game one, I mean, I could say 80% of the people, of the fans, they were Dodger fans. Even the Texas fans that I showing up, they were season ticket holders. They're pulling for the Dodgers. So we have a lot of support over there. Everybody loves us over there.
And they
feel that we're going to take it this time.
Could you move around the stadium wherever your seats were? Could you move down, stuff like that?
Yeah, you could. They're very friendly. They let you go up and down. Just the roads that they put strap on them so you won't be able to see it. Like you see the row, empty row. You can't go sit right there because they have straps. They're like locked and you can't pull them down or anything like that. But you can walk around. They're really cool with you. The only thing that you can't bring no plastic bags, no nothing. You got to be with no bags, no handbags. They do have a locker outside in the truck, and you have to pay $10 to put your stuff in there. But other than that, everything else is really good.
All right. Well, hey, you're lucky you got to see a couple of games there. Thanks for listening to the show.
Yeah, I'm going back to Saturday, you guys. Right. I'm going back to Saturday, and we got this.
All right. Take it easy, Rudy. Thanks.
Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it. Go Dodgers.
All right, pleasure. Let's go Ray in L.A. Ray, to you, all is good, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm on green. And just like everybody else, that last caller, that fake Dodger fan, you know, let's just say I made a couple of mistakes in my life. You know, when you get incarcerated and you want to go home, your release date's coming up, then there's always that one guy that's right there hanging around that says, oh, no, you're not going home. You probably have a hold on you. You just got to get away from that guy. And that's what that last guy reminded me of. Well, just like that pitcher from the Braves, Freed, where everybody thought that youngster was going to get us, and we got him that second game, we're going to do the same thing to this guy right here. This is the start of a dynasty. Dodgers will win today, and we'll win the rest of these games, and we will be the champs.
Ray, you know what's interesting? I don't know a lot about incarceration, but you just taught me something. How do you know this? How do you know that's what people say?
Yeah, I had a couple of misunderstandings a couple of years ago.
Okay. All right. Ray, thanks for calling. We kind of lost Ray to his answer there. Rodney, did you hear him?
He said he had a couple of misunderstandings a few years ago.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
Well, everybody gets a second chance.
Yeah.
Everybody deserves
it. But he's saying that guy, you know, when you're getting out, the guy said, you ain't getting out. You're a loser. No. You got to keep those people out of your life.
All right, Ed. Well, what are you? Ed's sick of haters, right, Ed?
I'm sick of the haters, guys. Hey, first of all, Fred and Robbie, man, it's a pleasure to talk to you guys, LA Icons. I've heard so many calls about these game two, what Dave Roberts did with the pitching and all the hating. And I just want to bring up something that growing up as a pitcher, it's a big deal to have experience. And what I love about game two is he got Gonsolin in there. He got May in there. They may not have had their best stuff, but now they have World Series experience. These guys didn't have postseason experience. No matter how confident you are going in as a pitcher, nothing prepares you for that. So I'm really stoked these guys got a chance to get in there. And now come game six, game seven, when we need these guys, they're going to have less butterflies. They're going to be in there with some confidence. I'm really, really sick of people second-guessing Dave Roberts when he's one of the best managers in the league.
All right. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it. He doesn't want any more haters, Rodney. Doesn't want any more. He's had it.
And he's right, though. So there's no substitute for experience. So as good and bad, and like you mentioned, you know, the last series against Atlanta, May was good, and he had a tough outing in game two, but that doesn't mean he's not going to have a better outing next time he's out there, and there is no substitute for experience, especially in a World Series.
Agree. If you're on hold, we're going to do more calls next hour, okay? So you can sit and wait, or you can call back next hour. And we want to get everybody on before we get off the air at noon today, but we're going to continue that next hour. And top of the hour, we'll get you caught up to date on what is going on to the very minute. Whatever you've missed today, we will cover it in its lit. Plus, we'll have the big weekend haiku coming up.
The World Series is tied up. One game apiece heading into game three today.
The job's not finished.
We go wall-to-wall with Dodger coverage leading up to first pitch.
We are three wins away.
Join Tim Cates and Steve Sachs at 7 a.m. and listen all day on AM 570 or...
hear every World Series game live on the iHeartRadio app.
It is. I mean, that is just sad.
sad sack of the day.
All right, here we go. It's about time to acknowledge this group.
You've been chilling, you've been calm, you've been cool throughout this whole show, and then this comes on, you sit up in your chair.
Well, I have to, because we have to pay tribute to those that deserve it. Your sad sack of the day. This is big. It's a whole group, the New York Giants. The G-Man blew a 21-10 lead in the final 6 minutes of the fourth quarter last night against the Eagles. After the 22-21 loss, where Daniel Jones fell over the line running into the end zone, the Giants saw their record fall to 1-6 on the season and are now in sole possession of last place in the NFC East. Again, your sad sack of the day, the New York Giants. Well done.
I felt bad for Daniel Jones, too. He was that's one of those things you have, you know, you have a reoccurring nightmare about. I'm all alone. I'm running for a touchdown, and then the chalk trips you. You know, it's like you're running and you're running away from a scary person, and you fall and you can't get up.
Well, you know what? At least it wasn't on national TV.
At least it wasn't.
Yeah, that's the good news.
Yeah, a lot of people were watching the debate, so they didn't have a chance to see him fall.
Okay, haiku coming up. Top of the hour, but now quickly let's bring on someone that we've looked forward to chatting to for a while, Brett Swain. And Brett, thanks for being here.
Glad to be here. Glad to share my stories, man. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, let's start with your stories. Going back to high school and Carlsbad High, San Diego State, and then with the Packers. Talk about that a little bit before we get started.
Yeah, man. Started at Carlsbad High School. Enjoyed 4 years there, got the opportunity to go down to San Diego State and play Division I football. Went through a few different coaches, head coaches down there. I had Tom Kraft and Chuck Long. So went through a lot of adversity down in San Diego State, learned how to deal with a lot of adversity there. So that was probably the plus and a lot of the reasons why I was able to continue to move forward, because I was able to take whatever I was learning at San Diego State and move forward to go play for the Green Bay Packers, was drafted in the 7th round, and enjoyed 4 years there, played in a Super Bowl, played a little bit with the San Francisco 49ers, and ended up in Seattle, finished my career in Canada playing for the Saskatchewan Roughriders. So kind of a journeyman, kind of a special teamer that kind of went from team to team, but you know, that was kind of my role in the NFL, and that's what I embraced, and was able to kind of have a nice little career for a 6-foot white boy from Carlsbad, California, you know.
No, I love it, but man, don't sell yourself short, man. Any 1 year in the league is a great year in the league. And now you're a strength and conditioning coach, but I also want to tell you, you won the Super Bowl when you were with the Green Bay Packers. I had an opportunity to go late in my career with the Carolina Panthers, and we ended up losing to the Patriots. But you got yourself a ring, man. Don't sell that short.
Yeah, man. No. Oh, no. That is, you know, and that's what I tell people, that, you know, that ring represents who I am today. And that's kind of what I take into my strength and conditioning programs, the same concepts that I've learned, the adversity that I've been through, the adversity that, you know, that you learn with your brothers on teams that you guys go through. I bring that all into my training programs, and we call it strength and conditioning, but I really call it mentorship training. We take it down to the deep roots of why we do what we do. So I love it. I have a passion working with kids at all levels, starting to get to work with a lot more older players, some NFL type clientele, and that's kind of trickling down to all different sports and levels of athletes. And I meet all different types of people. And it's just like when you play in the NFL, you meet all different types of people. And, you know, I really love that aspect of it. And that's kind of that locker room atmosphere that you can kind of create on the training field. So really passionate about it. Love what I do. Went through the master's program at CUI, and really helped me develop who I am as a coach. And also, I'm coaching at Carlsbad High School, so I'm enjoying working with young men and helping develop their lives, and excited to see where they go and take their lives and careers off to.
No, I love it, and I love the fact that you talked about conditioning not only your body but conditioning your mind. because that's so important, especially right now as we're going through this, you know, COVID-19 pandemic. What would you recommend for the athlete out there that can't go to the gym, that can't hang out with his teammates? How would you talk to them about their workouts and what they should be doing right now?
And so I think that's an interesting question because it's so simple. It's really a simple thing that all athletes can really do. And one thing that COVID-19 and the pandemic and the shutdowns took away from us was our discipline. And that's kind of where I started when I started getting back in to the facilities and being able to get back on parks and fields and stuff like that, is that's what I noticed that was gone, was our discipline, our ability to get to a workout on time, and our ability to finish through cones, our ability to do the best we possibly can within each drill aspect of that. So what I would tell someone is just have the ability to continue to detail your discipline, get back on top of that, get a routine going, make sure that you wake up at a certain time, get to a field to a certain time, have a workout plan, get that thing done on a certain time, do everything to your best of ability, whatever it is, get into a park, put in some cones down, you know, jogging to one side cone, jogging back and hitting some push-ups. Yeah, I mean, you can go to World War II type workouts that can really condition your body, but also condition your mind, getting back into the details and discipline of training, because you can't really get to the technical stuff if you can't do the little things right. And I understand that through the learning process is that if we discipline our work in the beginning, the details and the techniques will come a lot easier in the end, because now our minds are conditioned and we're ready to learn. We just created a learning environment. So that's what I love doing with young athletes, because it's so obvious right off the rip. It's like the first thing we attack is, hey, you just stopped 5 steps short of that cone. Like, that's not who we are out here. Our standard is to finish through that cone, and then now we'll move our training forward from there. So that's what I love doing with training. And then you can develop the athletes on a consistent basis, just moving forward from there. And then they start understanding the standards out there. Then they understand how hard the techniques really are and how disciplined you really have to be. So that's super important to me. And what I think is important for any athlete to do is to create that discipline. If you can't do that, then it's going to be really hard to move forward in any training program.
Yeah, no, absolutely, man. And now you mentioned that you are a graduate of the Master's in Coaching Administration course at Concordia University Irvine, man. How's that helped you in your strength and conditioning and training of young adults?
Well, I think it's helped me because it's helped me develop my why. You know, it's like when I got done playing football, I was really interested in getting into coaching. So I put some feelers out there, and everybody that I kind of talked to, I sat down and talked to Rocky Long at San Diego State. I talked to some other coaches at high levels, and the very first thing they said was kind of like, the question is like, you really want to do this? And I was like, yeah, I really want to do this. And I really didn't understand what they meant at that moment in time. But when you get involved in coaching, you don't understand like, hey, like, it's an investment of time in the beginning. And if you're not ready to invest that time and understand that the value of that time might not be what you're looking for at that moment in time. So you kind of got to understand your why and your purpose of why you want to coach and how you want to develop athletes and really what your purpose of being there is. Because if you just jump right into it with like an NFL mindset, you might get smacked in the face real quick, because you understand human beings don't work at that level, and you can't develop them from a beginning level to an NFL level right off the rip. So the development is very important, and you got to understand how the value of that and the time commitment it takes and what you got to learn about human beings and how they react and how you got to stay consistent. And if you're not ready for all that, coaching gets really difficult, because you can never really accomplish what you really want to do is that's teach football, you know? So you got to continue to like develop the human and the athlete and the football player or the athlete, whatever sport they're playing. So that's what I learned from that program. It helped me develop those mindsets and those programs behind the training. So when it comes to the training, you get everything out of the athlete they possibly can give, you know. And if they're not doing that, then that's where we're attacking versus, hey, I really could care less how this looks right now. I'm attacking you as a person, you know. So we're going to understand that these are the standards that we want. And if you want to move in this direction, you can have all these things available for you, whether it's in sports or in life. So that's what the program's really kind of helped me develop. And, you know, I've seen really good positive results with athletes getting opportunities to go play at high levels. And the greatest thing that you see is them coming back and really investing back into that same relationship. And that's where you see the success kind of move forward. And I feel like that was created throughout that master's program that I went through.
Brett, that is great stuff. Listen, we appreciate you coming on. We appreciate you sharing your story, and thanks so much for your time.
Absolutely. I appreciate you guys. Thanks for having me.